moment is this. I really would have gone through your door. That door is stronger than it looks.
I know, Belinda said. I put it there, remember?
So you did. Any place I should start?
Adras Dorgan is too smart and has too much to lose, so it's unlikely to be him. Ventress has the least reason to be annoyed at him, almost certainly not enough for this.
Ventress is dead, Marge said.
Dead?
No one knows how long, but word got out around a week ago that bodyguard of hers, Darnell, stepped in.
That won't last, Belinda said. He's not a flexible thinker.
Focus on Silver, then? Marge asked.
If it's one of them, it's almost certainly him, Belinda said. Considering the friends Jason has made, Cole is the only one stupid enough to try something.
What is Wexler doing, if you're here?
We already figured out that if it was any of the big three, it was Cole, Belinda said. Sophie is taking a more direct approach.
Sophie stepped over broken glass and unconscious bodies, looking for someone cognizant enough to interrogate. She followed the closest groan of pain and found a hefty man slumped behind the bar with a broken bottle sticking out of his side. She easily hoisted him up on top of the bar, causing him to yell out as the bottle shifted.
As I was saying, Sophie said casually, I want to know what Silver is up to at the moment.
I haven't even met him, the man groaned. I answer to a guy who answers to a guy who answers to a guy. No one tells me anything.
Who does get told?
You know what Silver will do to you?
Sophie gripped the bottle and twisted, eliciting a scream.
The Docklands! He yelled. There's a tavern in the Docklands called Sailor's Rest.
I know it, Wexler said. There's a mist den operating out of the back.
Silver has been expanding the mist trade in a big way since you got out, the man said. The guy who runs it is the area boss for all the mist dens on that side of the city now.
Crystal mist was a drug made from recording crystals. Imbuing the contents into a powder that was dissolved into water, vaporized, and inhaled, it would create a world inside the mind based on the recordings. Crystal mist was illegal due to its deleterious effect on the brain. Over time, it caused a residue to build up that slowly but inexorably inflicted permanent damage. Even with magic, the damage couldn't be healed until the residue was purged. Since the residue was resistant to most forms of cleansing, that was an expensive, though not impossible, prospect. Cole Silver's father had maintained a small operation catering to members of the nobility with low tastes. He had the money and connections to discreetly arrange the expensive cleansing required. Cole had massively expanded the operations, knowing there was never a shortage of disenfranchised people looking for an escape. There was a pile of people in front of the door, so Sophie left by hopping lightly through the window and dropping down a story to the ground. By the time the third person had gone through it, very little of the glass was left, and she landed lightly amongst the shattered remnants of the window. The men she sent through it had staggered off already. She could see one of them helping the other down the street with an injured leg. She turned in the other direction, towards the Docklands, and started running. The ritual chant was long. It sounded more like a sermon glorifying the builder than the incantation for a ritual. As Killian continued, an aura started emitting from the starseed. It was faint, but held an echo of vast power, like the light of a star. The metal frame fell away from the sphere as it rose into the air, its aura washing over Jason. His own aura was already suppressed entirely by the collar around his neck. The tiny fragments that made up the sphere separated, drifting up to slowly float through the air around Jason. They rose off the sphere like smoke from a fire until the seed was fully disassembled and the fragments floated around him like a cloud. Suddenly their movements stopped, as if they were frozen in time. The starseed's aura surged abruptly and the fragments darted in, burying themselves in Jason's flesh.
Chapter 19. Defiance. The pain of the tiny objects digging into his flesh, Jason could endure well enough.
In the last 6 months, he had undergone enough suffering, both mental and physical, that he could take the peppering of wounds in stride, even as he dangled helpless from the ceiling. Below him, the magic circle shone with a silver light.
The star seed implantation process is not a swift one, Killian said. First, the seed will carve itself throughout your body, suborning your flesh in preparation for claiming your body as its own. The pain you feel now is simply a slow, easy start. It will grow over time, escalating until your mind can no longer endure it and breaks. But that will still only be the beginning. You will be broken again and again until there is nothing left of you, until only the will of the Builder remains. The star seed is a door that will allow him to reach through and claim your soul.
And I'll be here to watch, Silver said, gleefully. You know the best part, though, Asano. Let me tell you the part that convinced me that this was the way to punish you.
The chance for monologuing? Jason guessed, his voice only slightly strained. You don't need a star seed for that. You could have just explained your evil plot and then left, assuming everything would go as planned. That's how they do it where I come from.
Go ahead and blabber, Asano.
Okay. You should seriously reevaluate the ergonomics in here because I don't think this is good for my shoulders.
Shut up.
Make up your mind, guy. You really need to... Jason was cut off by a stab of pain.
Sorry? What was that, Asano?
Silver asked with a malevolent chuckle.
This is going to be very, very hard for you.
Jason let out a pain-tinged chuckle of his own.
That's funny, he groaned.
What is? I said the exact same thing to your mother last night. Really, Asano? The pain must be getting to you if cheap jokes about my mother are the best you can manage. My mother died a dozen years ago. Her ashes are interred in the family mausoleum.
That did take most of the fun out of it, Jason admitted. All I could really do was take the lid off the urn and waggle my thing in there. Silver's face turned red with fury. He moved to attack Jason, but stopped himself at the edge of the magic diagram.
Please restrain yourself, Mr. Silver, Killian said. Trust that the process will slowly bring him a level of suffering that no amount of bravado can withstand.
Silver relaxed, and the evil grin returned to his face.
You're right, Killian, he said. You interrupted me, Asano, when I was about to explain the best part of this whole thing. You see, it turns out that a starseed can't take you over, not unless you let it.
The inviolable soul, Killian said. One of the most fundamental rules of magic.
So what the starseed does,
Silver continued, relishing every word,
is just keep ramping up the pain until your mind can't take it. Don't think you will find relief in dark insensibility, though. After your body, it will come for your soul. There's no hiding from that. It may not have a way to invade your soul, Asano, but it can hurt it. You're going to suffer in ways you cannot imagine. Fortunately, you won't have to, because you'll feel all of it. You can't prevent it, avoid it, or escape it. You will suffer and suffer until you can't take any more and you give the Builder what he wants. You will open the door and let him in, allowing his will to supplant yours, just so the pain will stop. You'll be nothing more than a vessel, an empty husk, a puppet dancing on a string.
Silver moved close to Jason, carefully stepping over the lines of the magic circle without disturbing them. He gripped Jason by the hair and spoke softly into his ear.
I'm going to watch it all, Silver whispered. I'm going to taste your pain, revel in your suffering. The last thing you see in the final moment before your soul is snuffed out will be my face.
The last thought you will have will be the realization that you have been completely, utterly, and irrevocably broken, and that it happened because you took something that was mine.
Jason didn't respond, gritting his teeth against the pain, like icy cold worms burrowing through his body. Silver ran his hand down the side of Jason's face.
"And when we're done, we'll let you go," he said. "Of course, it won't really be you. I wonder what the Builder will have you do. Run off to the cultists. Perhaps you'll go back to your friends and see how much damage you can do before they catch on that you aren't home anymore. I would really like to hear that you killed Sophie. Would you do that for me? Make it ugly, too. Make her ugly. Let everyone know that what's mine is mine and no one else's."
"I don't know if anyone's told you this," Jason forced out through gritted teeth.
"But you're kind of a prick."
Jason felt the progress of the starseed as it invaded his body as biting cold, like his veins were turning to ice. As the cold burrowed its way through his body, however, the trails it left behind started to warm again. Jason could feel Colin's presence, working to reclaim his body from the starseed. As the starseed took hold throughout his body, he realized that it felt like Colin's dark mirror, cold and dead, instead of warm and filled with vibrant life. Colin's attempts to reclaim Jason's body didn't help with the pain. Just the opposite, in fact, as the starseed and the familiar fought a war inside his body. Colin was not truly in Jason's blood as a physical leech, however, but instead as a spirit form within Jason's soul, anchored to the physical world through the blood. In most cases, the death of a summoner would cause the familiar spirit to return to the astral as its anchor was severed. If Jason's soul was violated, however, Colin's spirit would be made vulnerable. Jason didn't know what that would mean for his familiar, but he was confident that it was nothing good. Jason knew Colin's efforts were inevitably doomed as the starseed altered his flesh faster than Colin could restore it. In that moment, however, he felt an incredible warmth for the life-devouring apocalypse beast working so hard to help him. He was filled with fresh determination to fight on, to protect his familiar the way his familiar was protecting him. Silver never seemed to tire of taunting Jason, but as the pain escalated, Jason was no longer hearing the words. All that he had was the pain, a world of white noise with no sense of place or time. When the pain abruptly receded and his senses started to return, he had no idea how long it had been.
"What happened?"
Silver asked. Jason had visibly relaxed, and the silver glow of the magic circle had significantly dimmed. Killian frowned.
"The Builder is an entity so powerful that if it were to directly touch this world, the world would be annihilated. The Starseed is a conduit of its power, but until it has a soul to feed on, we must supply it with power ourselves. The purpose of this magic circle is to gather and concentrate the ambient magic to fuel the Starseed. The magic of this region is weak, however, and we will need to periodically supplement the power with spirit coins to keep the ritual circle active."
"For how long do we have to keep spending coins?"
"Until Asano breaks and surrenders his soul to the Builder. He is only mortal, and the Builder is infinite. So long as we keep the circle fed, Asano will capitulate eventually."
"How eventually?" Silver asked.
"We're hidden well out here, but his allies will be looking, and they have both resources and power." "How long it will take depends on the strength of Asano's resolve. He will last longer than you would, I suspect."
"Why are you only telling me about this now?"
"The circle is depleting too quickly," Killian said.
"Did you even do it right?"
"If I failed to use the ritual correctly, the seed would not have become active in the first place."
Killian turned a curious gaze on Jason.
"Something about Asano is hindering the seed's work on his body, forcing it to work harder and consume more rapidly."
Jason, who they didn't realize was clinging once more to consciousness, let out a pained laugh that turned into a choking cough. He grinned madly at his captors, eyes bloodshot, but still alive.
"Keep smiling," Silver told him. "If you didn't have spirit, what would be the fun in breaking it?"
The first reprieve lasted only a few minutes before Killian fed spirit coins to the magic circle. It grew brighter, and the pain resumed. Colin had used that time to reclaim territory, but it wasn't enough. Jason was only vaguely aware that the screams he heard were his own before returning to that white space of pain. There were other brief spells of reprieve as the starseed exhausted itself against Jason and briefly went dormant, drawing more power from the circle. To Jason, it felt like each break was shorter than the last, but in truth, they were growing longer. It was his increasingly diminished capacities that were no longer able to gauge it accurately. Colin's efforts were likewise becoming less effective. As Jason weakened, so did he.
"It's taking longer and longer," Silver complained. "The last time it was stopped for hours. How long will this one be?"
"Probably most of the night," Killian said. "The magical density in this region is too low for the circle to collect magic efficiently, and we can only feed so many coins into the ritual circle without rupturing it. While the breaks are lasting longer, though, so is the period between them. Asano is losing the fight, as he inevitably will. He is one man against a power more vast than if you burned the planet we're standing on for fuel. I suggest we take this time to rest. I had Remy set up some beds in the next room. We'll know to come back when the screaming resumes."
"I don't want to miss him being broken," Silver said.
"You won't," Killian said. "He is proving much more resistant than I anticipated. You'll have all the time you need to enjoy his suffering."
"I want to watch him break."
"You will, Mr. Silver. After the body comes the mind and then the soul. What is the will of one man against a being greater than our entire world?"
"He's just hanging there," Silver said with disgust. "No screams, no writhing. He's practically relaxed."
"The starseed has claimed his body now," Killian said. "We are approaching the end. Even his brain is no longer his own. Whatever remains of his consciousness will have taken final refuge in the bastion of his soul. Soon he will yield, and you shall see him break, just as you wished."
The pain was gone, but Jason's senses did not return. There was no sight, no sound, no touch. He was in a place of pure will, the border between his soul and the entity that sought to claim it. He felt adrift at sea, not one of water, but of an immense will, a will too large for Jason to even conceive its totality, greater than the sky, vaster than the sun, older than the stars and more unfathomable than the deepest voids of space. Before that will, Jason was naked and exposed. It was more than being weak and vulnerable. In the face of that unconscionable power, he realized that not only was it beyond what he was, but it was beyond anything he could ever be, anything he could even conceive of. He was the smallest speck of creation in front of a force that transcended creation. Oddly, it was not a wholly unfamiliar sensation. From the moment he had been cast adrift in a strange world full of power and danger, Jason had been surrounded by forces larger than himself. Time and again, he had been brought to the brink, constantly under pressure. He had fought off death and stood defiant in the face of gods. Life in his new world was a fire, burning away everything he had believed himself to be and refining him down to what he truly was. He could feel the desire for capitulation radiating from that vast will, the pressure it exerted pushing in on his soul. But he knew that pressure. He had endured it from the very start. It was as if everything he encountered in this world was preparing him for this moment. Next to the alien mind of the Builder and its towering will, Jason was nothing. But he realized that even the transcendent being with all its power could not open the doors to his soul. Only Jason could do that. So long as he had the will to defy it, the Builder could not claim him. He gathered his own will and threw it into the Builder's own, a grain of sand in a hurricane.
"Is he..."
grinning? Silver asked. He's grinning. How is... what? Killian, what is happening?
I have no idea,
Killian said. If Jason's ears still belonged to him, he would have recognized the same delighted tone Clive would use on encountering something completely unexpected. The two men were startled when Jason spoke.
Is that all you've got, mate? You'll have to do better than that, you interdimensional arsehole.
Killian started laughing madly.
You think this is funny? Silver asked him.
That shouldn't be possible, Killian said, awestruck. That really, really shouldn't be possible.
In the wake of Jason's outburst, the pressure of that vast will suddenly vanished. Like a becalmed sea, the absolute stillness carried an ominous sense of danger, isolation, and helplessness. Most of all, it carried a silent threat, an anticipation of what would come when the weather inevitably turned. Killian and Silver looked on as Jason once more hung limp and unmoving. Silver was increasingly agitated, while Killian had gone from curious observation to avid fascination.
We should kill him now, Silver said. I'll do it.
You would be well advised not to take back what you have offered to the Builder, Killian said. We started this, and have to see it through to the end or pay the price.
What kind of price?
The worst kind, Killian said. The price you don't know until you pay it. But you don't have to worry. A mere man cannot defy the will of a transcendent being.
And if you're wrong?
Then that is the point. We kill him. And make sure it's done right, Killian said. A man who can defy that kind of power can do anything. That's not a person you leave alive. Not after what we've done to him. But, as I said, that isn't possible.
Silver opened his mouth to respond, but stopped. Both men turned to face the door. They had sensed the agitated aura of the guard, Remy, rapidly approaching. His arrival was marked with a hammering knock.
Mr. Silver, Mr. Laurent,
Remy's voice came through. Remy was in charge of watching over the site while Silver and Killian dealt with Jason. He should not have left the security room unless something went wrong. Silver and Killian went to the outer room, and Killian opened the exterior door.
What is it?
He demanded.
We've been sleeping in shifts in the security room, Remy said. I just woke up to find Corbin dead and Jeddak gone. I didn't feel any aura surge from powers being used, so we must have killed Corbin without using them. There was a stab wound in the back of Coburn's neck.
How long ago?
Killian asked.
I can't be sure, Remy said. Hours, I don't know how many.
That makes no sense, Silver said. Why would he do that?
I don't know, Remy said. I can only assume it's something to do with Jeddak's connection to Asano.
That's why I chose him, Silver said. Asano got him kicked out of the Adventure Society. If anything, he should want to get his own kicks in. Why kill Coburn and leave?
It doesn't matter, Killian said. It's over. Your errant henchman has had hours to get back to the city and warn Asano's allies. They are doubtless on their way here right now.
You don't know that, Silver said. Why would Jeddak help Asano? It makes no sense.
Killian's normal, obsequious posture straightened. His creepy, pandering half-smile vanished. Silver hadn't noticed the dangerous change in Killian's body language. Remy did, quietly backing away. Killian stood tall, his pale face blank and expressionless, his eyes hard. Even his aura changed, becoming steely hard.
Just because you lack the imagination doesn't mean there isn't a reason, Killian said to Silver. He may be trying to regain admittance to the Adventure Society by helping the man who got him kicked out. He might have realized that we were using the Builder Cult star seed and balked. In the end, the reasons don't matter. Only the result.
Wait, what was that about the Builder Cult? Remy asked.
Killian glanced at Remy, and a bone spike shot out of the ground, impaling the henchman. The difference between a skilled and powerful bronze ranker closing in on Silver and a failed adventurer like Remy was made blindingly obvious as the henchman's corpse slid limply down the spike. Silver looked on in shock, finally realizing that Killian was far stronger than he had ever let on.
"We are done," Killian said. "We're done here. We're done in Greenstone, and we are done as a collaboration."
"What are you talking about?"
Silver asked.
"Do you still not understand that this undertaking wasn't even a risk?"
Killian asked.
"It was always going to go wrong. Your position in Greenstone is untenable now. Asano's allies are too powerful, and I promise they are coming for you even as we speak. It was always going to come to this."
"Then why did you go along with it?" Silver asked. "You arrange most of this."
"Because I have diverted enough resources from your operations over the past year to meet my needs going forward," Killian said. "When Lamprey brought this idea to you, it presented the perfect distraction to extricate myself from you and this city. While everyone is chasing after you for killing Asano, I can conclude my affairs and depart in peace. This is where we part ways, Mr. Silver."
Silver reeled at the betrayal of his most trusted follower.
"You're turning against me."
"Of course," Killian said. "If anything, I'm amazed anyone is loyal to you at all. You're completely oblivious to how much effort I had to expend on holding your organization together, in spite of your best efforts."
Silver lunged at Killian, only for more bones to erupt from the ground, spearing into the crime lord's flesh and holding him in place. Silver grabbed two of the bones and flexed them outwards, but while the bones gave a little, they held. Silver's strength-enhancing power was in the early stages of bronze. It was no match for Killian's conjuration power that had already reached Silver.
"So pathetic," Killian said. "You could put up more of a fight if you knew how, but you don't even understand your own powers. All those monster cores. Helpless victims, instead of even the pretense of actual combat. You truly are a wretched thing. But I won't kill you, Mr. Silver. When you wake up, I suggest you don't spare Asano the same mercy. If the Builder doesn't have him by then, kill him and run. With Asano's friends after you, you'll be lucky to live long enough to pay the price of denying the Builder."
Silver glared at Killian with frenzied eyes.
"And if they catch me and I set them on you?"
"Mr. Silver, you don't know a single thing about me. You don't know who works for me or what my holdings are. If you did, you'd wonder why so many of them had gone missing from your own months ago."
"I'm going to kill you,"
Silver snarled.
"Unlikely, but good luck," Killian said.
A skeletal arm burst through the pavers and started choking Silver. Silver tried to spit out more words, but they came out as a choked-off gurgle. He tried to use his active powers, but the bone cage had a suppression effect that prevented them from activating. His last thought before passing out was fury at a world that kept denying him the things that were his by right. All that was left of Jason's true self was hidden away in the fortress of his soul. His body stolen, he had no brain to drive his thoughts. He was quickly reduced to little more than a last scrap of will, the innermost core of his being. Beyond the impregnable walls of his soul, the power of the Builder had undergone a change. If it could not cow Jason into capitulation, it would go back to inflicting pain until he yielded. The Builder's will became a hurricane of knives, scoring marks across Jason's soul. It was a pain anything unlike the body could suffer, cutting not at flesh, but at the very essence of his being. Jason endured, the warm presence of his familiar beside him. In his unthinking state, he had a vague sense of things that were missing. He no longer remembered the familiars he had yet to resummon, yet he felt their absence. It became worse. The knives were drills boring their way into his soul. Yet still they failed. So long as Jason had the will to resist, they could not breach his soul. All they could do was bring pain that carried with it a promise. It could stop, and all he had to do was give in. The pain scoured away the echoes that were the remnants of what Jason had been when his body and mind were his own. All that remained was a meager scrap of self, ragged and torn, yet still unyielding. The days of torment since the star seed had been implanted were a microcosm of every threat Jason had faced since arriving in his new world. Those memories were gone now, but their effects were still felt. The events had made him anew, reforging the very core of his being into something that would never stop struggling. Even against the indomitable will of an alien mind with power beyond imagining, even when there was nothing left of him but the will to struggle. The Builder's will was unrelenting, sending pain into the reaches of Jason's soul it could otherwise not reach, into the fortress of Jason's soul. All that remained was a flickering ember, the last scrap of his true self. The alien mind strove to extinguish that final spark, but it refused to die out. After stripping everything else away, only one part of Jason remained. The one thing that had kept him going, every time he walked the line between life and death, that pushed him on in the face of monsters, cultists, cannibals, and gods. The memories of those experiences were lost, but the will they had formed was the one thing he had left, the unwillingness to bend, to conform, to capitulate. All that remained of Jason Asano was pure, unadulterated defiance. He could not out-endure the Builder any more than a dandelion could withstand a tornado. But while the great astral being had no limits, the star seed connecting it to Jason did. The harder the Builder pushed Jason, the faster its power was consumed. Finally, the Builder's will faded as the seed went dormant, forced to stop and replenish itself from the diminishing power left in the magic circle, feeding it. In the aftermath of the storm, Jason's soul pulsed and throbbed, rattled by the forces that had besieged it. From deep within, something shifted, as if the alien power drilling into it had uncovered some vast power, buried and forgotten. Power built and built within, pressure climbing like a volcano on the verge of eruption. The fading ember of Jason's will ignited into a furious flame that exploded out, burning at the icy clutches of the starseed that had claimed his body. Colin's spirit soared out, the familiar adding its own power as Jason's will strove to retake the body left undefended by the dormant starseed. The Builder's will returned, having sensed the danger to the starseed posed by Jason's resurgence. There was only a fragment of power left within the seed, and Jason felt a flicker of uncertainty in that ancient alien mind. It had to stop Jason now, before the starseed was fully overcome. The Builder impinged upon him with all the strength of its will. The seed, already drained of all but the last skerricks of energy, could not take the strain. The Builder's attempt to head Jason off before he could turn the tables on the seed had itself pushed it past its limits, ruining the starseed for good. The connection was gone, and the Builder's will with it. The seed was dead, and the conduit to the Builder with it. The physical remnants of the seed were still in Jason's body, but they were inert, a spent force. The end of their power was not the end of their threat, however. Those physical remnants riddled Jason's body. Without the seed's power keeping him alive as it transformed him, the foreign matter running through his body was now killing him. If not for the strange nature of his outworlder body, he would have been dead already. Even as his body failed, however, his soul reclaimed it. Jason's consciousness returned, only to fade away again, unable to function with the remnants of the starseed riddling his brain. Jason came to, still hanging from the ceiling. His body was wet with his own blood, leaking from rents in his flesh where the starseed fragments had been pushed back out of his body. Colin had somehow kept him alive through the laborious task of purging his body of the starseed, restoring him to something that only vaguely resembled health. He could feel Colin, now dormant inside him. The familiar had given all that he had to keep Jason alive.
"You did good, buddy," Jason croaked. "You have yourself a good rest."
His body was ravaged, more weak and exhausted than he had ever thought possible. Yet somehow, he felt strong, stronger than he had ever been. He could feel his soul, sense it in a way that he never could before. It was his true self, his last refuge, not the meat shell he'd been walking around in. Ever since finding out his body had been destroyed and remade from magic, he had a sense of unease about himself and his very existence. That was gone now, as he realized that the body he wore was ultimately no more important than a suit. He craned his neck to look down at the fragments of starseed on the floor underneath him. The magic circle had turned to ash. He laughed, hoarse and painful, but he kept on cackling like a madman.
"I don't know if you can hear me through your dead magic rectal probe," Jason growled. "But you need to listen up, you interdimensional soul bandit. You just got beat by the assistant manager of an office supply retailer while he was hanging from a hook and naked as the day he was born. And reborn, for that matter. So you'd best pack up your piss-weak little cult and take them back to your magic land in the sky, because I'm coming for them. And this time, I'm going to have pants."
Chapter 20. Hanging Around.
Where the hell are the bad guys?
Still hanging from the ceiling, Jason remembered that his torture had come with torturers. They might have seemed inconsequential when he was facing off against the Builder, but now that fight was over and he was still strung up like meat on a butcher's hook. Even if he wasn't bound and he was wearing at least some underpants instead of the suppression collar, both of his captors were higher rank than him. At full strength, which he definitely wasn't, he thought he could probably take Silver. The elf was a different matter. The weird, pale elf had the kind of rigid aura control Jason associated with expert essence users, and he knew enough of them to judge. What someone with actual skill was doing working for Silver was a mystery. The more Jason thought about it, the more odd the elf's presence seemed. He claimed not to be part of the Builder cult, but he had known an awful lot about how the Starseed worked. Jason was willing to bet that whatever the elf was up to, he was playing Silver for a fool. It might even be the reason the pair were in absentia. Jason considered his options. At full strength, he could probably pull out the hook the elf had hammered into the ceiling and free himself, even without magical abilities. He was strong and well-trained enough that he could hoist himself up and put his feet against the ceiling for leverage. He was nowhere near full strength at the moment, however. His body was visibly emaciated under the coating of blood and pocked with small injuries. Jason could feel that inside him Colin had gone dormant. The familiar had exhausted himself keeping Jason alive and purging the starseed remnants. The dead fragments had been pushed out of Jason's body by Colin's healing, piling up under Jason's dangling feet. Far more than the mass that had been the original seed, there was almost a fifth of Jason's body weight in metal, sticky with Jason's blood.
"Good job, little mate."
Jason could feel the sting of the remnant wounds all over his body. One was right above his left eye, which he had to force open through the sticky blood welding it shut. He could feel another just to the right of his chin, underneath a scratchy beard that had grown during the time of his captivity. Neither were drastic. Like the other wounds, they were the places the starseed had invaded his body, then pushed back out again. The real damage had been wreaked on the inside of his body and the outside of his soul. The wounds were present all across his body, although his most tender parts had been mercifully spared. The wounds weren't any particular threat to his well-being, but they variously stung or itched, which he could do nothing about in his current predicament. He laughed at the absurdity of a few itchy scratches annoying him after the ordeal he had been through, or even the situation he was still in. The goddess Knowledge had once denied that Jason's mind had been altered when he became an outworlder to better process the kind of trauma he had suffered since. Now, considering his odd equanimity after days of literally soul-scourging torture, he was pretty sure she'd been lying. She had likewise skipped over the part about his outworlder body, but that was probably for the best. At that point, he hadn't been ready to hear any of that, as he clung desperately to any part of his old identity. Jason considered his options. One, literally hang around and wait for rescue. His friends were capable and would find him eventually. but would it be before Silver and the elf came back? Option two was still in the formulation stage. He was too weak to move, too powerless to act. His new awareness of his own soul brought with it a better sense of the pressure being placed on it by the suppression collar. It was like his soul had grown to touch the sides of that containment, like a balloon being inflated inside a box. He felt an intense compulsion to push his way out of that box. Could he? He was hardly in the best state right now, and the collar was an oppressive power. It presented no physical pressure, but had the feel of an inviolable boundary. In spite of this limitation, he couldn't shake the desire to try. He pondered where that feeling was coming from. Jason was certain that he had undergone significant changes as a result of overcoming the challenge of the starseed, but for the first time he was without a system message to explain it. Unlike other essence users, Jason had never been forced to fathom out his abilities by feel. There was an element of it, but he always had the system messages to guide and clarify. Was the desire to push back against the suppression just wish fulfillment? Or an instinctual understanding of an ability that had changed? Perhaps his astral affinity had evolved from the contact with a great astral being. He decided to go for it, closing his eyes and feeling out the power within his soul. He was uncertain of how to actively use it. Following an instinct, he used the aura projection technique that Farah had taught him as a foundation and projected that power outward. The instinct proved itself true. He realized through his attempt that the true nature of his aura was a projection of his soul. That first attempt was fumbling and inexpert, but armed with this new revelation, he tried again. Jason's aura was completely suppressed by the collar, but he could feel the strength within himself to push back against that confinement. His second attempt felt more refined and powerful than the first, but it was like trying to push a boulder off his body. He strained and felt a tantalizing shift in the walls that bound his aura, but could not push them back. Eventually, he could not maintain the exertion and was forced to take a pause. He realized that continuing that way was not going to yield results. He needed to significantly improve the way he wielded the power. With the revelation that his aura and his soul were more intrinsically linked than he had previously thought, he needed to alter the way he used his aura. Jason had always considered his aura control very strong, and others had told him as much. He thought of Rufus, and his realization that people telling him how excellent he was had stopped him from trying to get better. With his improved sense of his own soul and the new understanding of his aura, Jason realized that his aura use had been crude and inefficient. He needed to better incorporate the power of his soul into the way he used his aura. The foundation that Farah had helped him lie down was a solid base from which to inject the core power of his soul that his conflict with the Builder had revealed. Once he mastered it, it would magnify his power and control over his aura by an untold amount. The suppression collar would be the crucible in which he remade his aura. Instead of just projecting it out into nothing, that suppressive force would be the press that concentrated his power, the whetstone on which he sharpened his control. Previously, Jason had felt like his aura control was pushing the limit of what he was capable of. He assumed only the next rank would offer a chance to substantially improve. As he forced his aura up against the suppression collar's power, he realized how foolish and arrogant he had been. He was once again a fumbling amateur, taking him back to those first days training with Farah. He had crested a hill he thought was the end of his journey, only to find a grand new vista before him. There was a long new road ahead of him, and he was not going to reach the end here and now, dangling on a hook. What he needed in his current situation was to push back the suppression collar's power, if only for a fleeting moment. When he had been training Jason, Rufus had often repeated advice his family had hammered into him. This was especially true of his grandfather, the famous diamond rank swordmaster Roland Remor. From what Rufus had passed on, Jason secretly suspected the Remor patriarch of spending his diamond rank lifespan figuring out how to sound as profound as possible. This world didn't have fortune cookies, so he had to find the rhythms himself. Rufus had talked a lot about his grandfather's ideas on the difference between a good adventurer and a great one. In the wake of Rufus's disastrous foray against the blood cultists, it was a distinction that he obsessed on. He became preoccupied with his failures, doubting his judgment, leadership, and even qualifications as an adventurer. It was a pattern that had played out again with Farah's death. According to Rufus's grandfather, the difference between a good adventurer and a great one was a matter of moments. The right decision in the right moment was the difference between success and failure, between triumph and death. Great adventurers were alchemists of circumstance, turning opportunity into fortune. After how things played out with the blood cult, Rufus believed Jason had an instinctual gift for this very thing. Jason hoped Rufus was right. He threw everything he had against the collar's containment, pushing his aura against it like he was shouldering a boulder. He pushed and strained until a final surge finally caused it to shift. He had bought himself a moment, and now he had to use it. System messages erupted in Jason's face, but he ignored them, opening his inventory next to his manacled hands and snatching out an item, barely getting it in hand before the suppression snapped back into place, pushing his aura back down. The system windows dissolved into static and vanished. The backlash scraped against his very soul. The pain would have made him pass out before his recent experiences. It did almost make him drop the small vial he now had in his hand, and panic flashed through him. He convulsively clutched his fingers around the vial, almost breaking it with the panicked ferocity of his grip. He once again hung limply from the manacles, panting for breath. Dangling from the ceiling made for a poor recovery position. As he regained his breath, he looked up at the small vial. He had used his original lesser miracle potion, fighting the giant water elemental, but Jory had replaced it before they had even gotten all the way through Old City. He craned his neck, lining up his mouth as best he could before thumbing the stopper off the vial. Some of the potion splashed onto his face, but most went into his mouth, and he poked his tongue out to lick up what he could of the rest. The potion's effects were, as promised, miraculous. He felt the healing sting as emaciated muscle was replenished, and the wounds all over his body finished healing. Looking down at his chest, Jason saw that the injuries had left behind a series of small scars. Those on his face had likely done the same. His body was now flush with energy. The suppression collar had no impact on the magic of the potion, although Jason had no way to use his refilled mana pool. Instead, he went to work on expending some stamina, straining his arms to grip the chain of the manacles. Jason's fighting style, the Way of the Reaper, was much more comprehensive than a simple martial art. It included mobility techniques, stealth, and, immediately relevant, escape methodology. Jason pulled himself up, hand over hand, then shifted his weight to pivot his body, swinging his legs up until his feet were pressed into the ceiling. The ring the manacles were looped through was held in place by a spike the elf had fixed into place with conjured skeleton arms. It hadn't been a carefully bored hole, just a smooth, unthreaded spike that was hammered directly into the brickwork. Jason figured that he could combine leverage, strength, and body weight to yank it right out. It was a task that proved easier to conceive of than to execute, and Jason was left hanging upside down, reefing on the chain. He had been at it some time when the spike suddenly gave way and he fell to the floor in a heap. He stood up, awkwardly reaching around with his manacled hands to brush off the fragments of the inert starseed that stuck to his body when he landed. They had formed a pile underneath where he had been hanging and, like Jason, were sticky with Jason's blood. The remnants of the ritual circle were nothing but ash. There was nothing else in the room, and Jason wasted little time making for the door. Passing through the outer room to the exterior of the building, he surveyed his surroundings. He quickly surmised he was somewhere on the outskirts of the delta, where the last patches of scrubland gave out and the dead sands took over. The layouts of the buildings were similar to Spirit Coin Exchange outposts he'd seen, although this one was obviously disused. Patches of yellow grass grew between pavers, dislodged and uneven from time and weather. To his surprise, Silver was out in the open, lying in a pool of his own blood. Jason's aura sensors were restricted alongside his aura, so he wasn't sure if Silver was alive or dead. The same could not be said for another man Jason recognized as the guard who had given him a spirit coin while he was awaiting his fate. That man was definitively dead. a thick bone spike sticking out of the ground, went in through his groin and out the top of his head, leaving him hanging like a macabre decoration. Jason checked on Silver. He had brutal strangulation marks on his neck and multiple stab wounds in his arms, legs, and torso. Silver had bled quite a lot, but while in a bad way, not enough to threaten a bronze ranker with death. His bronze rank recovery attribute would heal him faster than a normal person, although it hadn't woken him up in all the time Jason had been hanging in the building.
"Someone sure did a number on you," Jason said as he searched Silver's body.
He discovered a small keychain in a jacket pocket, cheering when he found the key to his manacles and the collar around his neck. The sensation of removing the collar was like taking that first breath after almost drowning. It was a relief like finding a toilet just in time to avoid soiling yourself in the middle of a shopping center. Jason didn't waste more than a moment reveling as he felt his powers return. He minimized all the system messages flooding his vision and snapped the suppression collar around Silver's neck. Silver didn't react. He remained unconscious as Jason then placed the manacles on Silver's ankles.
"Now we'll see how you like being a prisoner," Jason told him.
"No, that's a crappy one-liner.
You'll have plenty of time for sleep in the slammer."
"That's worse. This is hard. Are 80s action movies not as good as I remember? Colin, when we get back to my world, I'm going to show you Jim Carter. It's literally everything you need to know about Western culture." Jason resumed his search of Silver's person, finding that a pocket in his jacket led to a dimensional storage space. He emptied it out and stole everything that looked interesting or valuable, shoving it all into his own inventory except for his missing amulet, which he immediately clasped around his neck. It was time to get some clothes on, but he was still covered in blood. Jason pulled out a bottle of crystal wash and tipped it over his head. It washed the blood off his body and out of his hair, including his new beard. There was no sign of his missing suit, so he summoned another from his inventory. The dark mist covered his modesty, but at this point it didn't really matter. Even if Jason hadn't got used to the nudity, the only people here were either unconscious or dead. Jason was tweaking his cufflinks when he froze, seeing movement in the distance. Three vehicles were careening over scrubby ground, a trio of skimmers rocketing towards him. As he watched, most of the figures on one of the skimmers vanished, and he was suddenly surrounded by people. Danielle Geller had teleported Rufus, Gary, and Humphrey from their skimmer directly next to him.
"Ah, you're here," Jason said, and finished adjusting his cufflink.
"And here was me, just needing a ride."
Jason's attempt at dignity was immediately smothered as Gary grasped him in a hug that was more like a rugby tackle. Chapter 21. What Doesn't Kill You. The rest of Jason's team arrived in the three skimmers. Clive drove one, and a somewhat shaky Jory and Belinda drove the others, both for the first time. Everyone poured off the vehicles before they had even fully stopped, clamoring around Jason. He met their looks of concern with easy confidence, assuring them that he was fine. Clive had so many questions he didn't actually manage to get any of them out. Humphrey gripped Jason on the shoulder, giving him a beaming smile that the young women of Greenstone would sell out their own families to receive.
"We rush out here to rescue you," Belinda said. "And you're standing here like you're waiting for a ride to the damn symphony. Do you have any idea how many people we kicked the hell out of looking for you?"
"We?" Sophie asked.
"It was a team effort," Belinda said.
"Sophie took out two barrooms full of thugs single-handedly," Neil said. "One was full of criminals and the other was full of sailors."
"In fairness, there's a lot of crossover," Sophie said. "Are you really all right, Asano?"
"I had time to stop and pick you up a gift," Jason said. "It's a little damaged, but I don't think you'll mind." Everyone had been so fixated on Jason that they didn't even glance at the bodies on the ground. Jason walked over to the unconscious Silver and poked him with his foot.
"You got him," Sophie said.
"Yep," Jason said. "He's all yours."
"No," Danielle said. "He's all mine. I have questions Mr. Silver there is going to find himself extremely compelled to answer."
How did you end up kidnapping him?
Gary asked.
It was an incredible fight, Jason said, pitting myself against a bronze ranker, exhausted after my daring escape, struggling back and forth until finally I clinched the hard-fought victory.
He looks pretty fresh for having fought you, Neil said. There isn't even any rot around the wounds.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, Jason said. I found him like this.
You found him like this? Rufus asked.
I should probably start at the beginning, Jason said.
Suddenly a bird swooped out of the sky, transforming into a puppy that slammed into his chest like an adorable bowling ball.
Oh, hey, mate, Jason said.
He held Stash in his arms and scratched him behind the ears. Humphrey took back his familiar with an admonishing look.
You have to be more careful, Humphrey scolded. What if Jason was hurt? You don't know what he's been through.
Jason's fine, Neil said. After reaching bronze rank, Neil's perception power, eyes of opportunity, allowed him to see the vulnerabilities of others. That included injuries, not just what they were, but what effects they had on the body. It was a powerful tool for a healer, letting him see the conditions of his team at a glance.
It got a little rough, I won't lie, Jason said. I chugged that miracle potion Jory gave me. Thanks for that one, Jory.
Maybe stop putting yourself in situations where you need them, Jory said.
Couldn't agree more, Jason said. No more dashing heroics for this adventurer.
And here you just said you won't lie, Sophie told him.
Jason ran them through events as best he could remember, but his memory was rather hazy. Even for the parts for which he was in control of his brain to form memories, the pain made his recollection rather sketchy. The most important events took place when he retreated into his soul, which he didn't exactly remember. Instead, it was like his feelings of that time were imprinted on him. Fear, pain, power, and defiance. It was difficult to put to words in any way that made sense. Jason's veneer of equanimity started to crack as he struggled to explain those moments, and Danielle put a stop to it, setting the others to work securing the site. With the sudden sense of safety, the door behind which Jason had been pushing all the panic, horror, and pain behind suddenly opened. His body shuddered, a chill passing over it. Danielle placed a concerned hand on his shoulder and felt him trembling, even as his face maintained a carefree smile. His legs felt shaky, and he pulled a chair from his inventory to sit down before he stumbled. He leaned back, tilting his head to the sky to feel the sun on his face. The others threw frequent glances back at Jason as they went about their tasks. Rufus and Gary searched the area, looking out for any sign of the missing elf Jason had described. Clive took the building where Jason had been tortured, while Humphrey searched the second building with its reflective glass. Neil and Jory examined the unconscious Silver, while Sophie and Belinda concentrated on the dead man lying near him. Belinda found a small, fresh hole in the pavers and spotted more where Silver lay close by. Further examination revealed that the holes were broken at the edges and tiny fragments were scattered around them. It looked like something thin and hard had broken through from below, and Belinda looked from the holes in the ground to the stab wound in Silver's body.
That elf Jason described, Belinda said to Sophie. We're assuming Killian Laurent, right?
The description fits, Sophie said.
Did I hear something about him conjuring bone spikes from the ground?
I think I've heard that, Sophie said.
Who's Killian Laurent? Jory asked from nearby.
He's been hovering around the periphery of the Silver family for years, Belinda said. Old man Silver only kept him around because he was solid with ritual magic.
There were also rumors that the old man used him to do the truly nasty stuff on the quiet, Sophie added. The things that even criminals and murderers would think twice about.
Word is that Laurent rose up sharply after the old man died, Belinda said. Why would he do this to Silver? Sophie wondered aloud. It can't be a takeover. Silver was unpalatable, but he had the family connections and at least some limits. No one would stand for that depraved elf being in charge.
I imagine the answers will have to wait until this guy wakes up, Jory said, kneeling over Silver.
The two women moved to stand over the man who was the genesis of so many of their misfortunes.
We should kill him now, Belinda said. It's not like anyone will care.
No, Sophie said. He can't suffer if he's dead.
I won't allow you to just start hurting him, Neil said. I'll remind you that I'm part of the Church of the Healer.
I wouldn't settle for physical pain, Sophie said. That fades, and I want him to suffer in ways that never end. I want him to see us and realize that chasing us has cost him everything.
I think he was mostly chasing you, Belinda told her. I'm pretty sure me he could take or leave.
If you want to hurt his feelings, go ahead, Neil said. So long as you don't stab him or anything, that's your business. Sophie looked over at Jason, then back down at Silver.
What if I just kick him a little?
Neil ignored that request, his eyes still panning over Silver's unconscious body. Jory, also assessing the damage, didn't have Neil's perception power. Instead, he relied on his knowledge and experience to make a physical examination.
The strangulation, right? Jory asked Neil.
Yes, Neil concurred. Whoever did it either came too close to killing him or didn't come close enough, depending on what they were after. There's damage to the brain that will take time to heal before he can wake up. He's bronze rank, though, so he'll fully recover, even without intervention. Elsewhere, Rufus and Gary were sweeping the area, but other than the building the others were searching, there was very little to find.
You don't buy this act of Jason's about being fine because he doesn't remember most of it, do you?
Gary asked quietly, glancing over to where Jason was slumped wearily on his chair.
Of course not, Rufus said. It was the same thing with the blood cultists. He was all right so long as things were still wild and dangerous, but once he was safe, it all caught up with him. This time will be a lot worse.
Did you feel his aura?
Yes, Rufus said gravely. His aura power has definitely reached bronze.
I think it might be stronger than mine, Gary said. I know my aura control isn't the best, but that shouldn't affect the raw power, and I'm almost silver rank. Even if his aura power is bronze, he's still iron. What do you have to do to a person's soul for that to happen?
Hopefully have them fight off a starseed, Rufus said.
You think it actually took him over?
I'm hoping not.
How do we help him?
Gary asked.
First, we make sure it's really him in there. Then, we be there for him. Let him know he's safe and among friends. Beyond that, we leave it to my mother. She's good at helping people through things like this.
You're right,
Gary said. Rufus's mother, Arabella, had made a reputation for herself by helping other adventurers through traumatic events that were an inevitable part of the job. It was only once she arrived to help her son in the wake of Farrah's death that Rufus was able to start truly moving past it. Humphrey searched through the security building. Along with Jason's missing suit, he found another dead body, this with a stab wound in the back of the neck. He knew this was likely Coburn, the man Jerick had killed in order to sneak back to the city and give them Jason's location. Only Clive was excited by what he found. In the makeshift ritual room where Jason had been tortured, he found the ashen remains of the ritual circle and the inert remnants of the starseed. After making a record of everything with a recording crystal, he started pulling out special sample boxes, collecting ash and sealing away the starseed fragments. Back outside, Danielle looked with concern at Jason, slumped in the chair.
I don't like that I have to tell you this, Danielle said. But after what you told us.
You have to assume that I've been compromised by the Builder, Jason finished for her.
I know. The Church of the Healer has taken over from Purity in dealing with the starseeds,
Danielle said.
Healer provided his people with the rituals they needed.
Good, Jason said. If you tried to turn me over to the purists, I would not go quietly.
I'm glad, Danielle said. I'm starting to realize that not going quietly is kind of your thing.
Jason looked up and they shared a smile, hers as motherly as his was weary. Once the group made sure there were no